True Railroad Tales and Centennial Reflections by David Davenport, an Alaska Railroad locomotive. Some steam locomotives enjoy extended lives in museums or tourist railroads. I enjoy retirement while celebrating the history of the Alaska Railroad Corporation. Visitors take my photos several times a day, and I do like posing just for them. The volunteers keep me presentable with fresh paint, spit polish, and elbow grease. They keep coming back year after year because they believe I talk to them. If you can hear a whistle blow, you can hear me too. My life began at the Davenport Locomotive Works in Davenport, Ohio, way back in 1907. There were so many of us Davenports that they just gave us builders' numbers. I still wear number 763 on the side of my smoke box. You can just call me Dave. I was delivered as a small, narrow-gauge locomotive with my wheel flanges spread just 36 inches between the rails. My coal bunker is inside the cab, and water tank rides above my boiler. While I may be a dinky, I am powerful with all my weight on drivers. The United States government put me to work on the giant Calibre cut in the Panama Canal, chugging about day and night, pulling dump cars loaded with rock. Giant steam shovels and hundreds of my kin moved mountains. Lieutenant Frederick Mears was in charge of building Panama railroads in support of the canal project. Finally, in 1914, ships could sail from the Gulf of Mexico across the Isthmus of Panama and out into the Pacific Ocean. After a job well done, locomotive fires were pulled and we were sent into the hot, humid tropical jungle for storage. The Alaska Engineering Commission was charged with building a railroad in Alaska. My old boss, Frederick Mears, was put in charge, and he did not forget the faithful locomotives stored in Panama. In 1915, he shipped us up from the Panamanian broiler to the Alaskan icebox to help build 473 miles of railroad from Seward to Fairbanks. Our ship landed at the mouth of Ship Creek in a brand new railroad town on Cook Inlet, which had just been named Anchorage. I went right to work with the dump cars and steam shovel again moving mountains. The larger 200-class and 600-class Panama locomotives were broad gauge, measuring 5 feet between the rails. They all received new wide tires on their drivers, which converted them to standard gauge of 4'8½", so they could operate on the Alaska Railroad. These locomotives were the 260 moguls and served the railroad during construction and for many years after. President Warren G. Harding got to pull the throttle on Mogul No. 601 when he came to Alaska in 1923 to drive the Gold Spike in ceremonies at Nenana, Alaska. On completion of construction, there was no need for us little 3-foot narrow-gauge dinkies except on the Moose Creek coal branch, and some of my Baldwin cousins got that job. So back to the storage line for old Dave. Steam engines depend on a lot of people in order to get their work done. Waking from a rest, the fireman or hostler needs to get the water up to the proper level in the boiler. Then rake the fire in the firebox, remove any clinkers before adding coal to our fire. Only with a hot fire can we make enough steam to do real work. It will take a few hours to get up steam if the boiler was cold, so grab that oil can and we will do a walk around. Check the lubricator, top it off with steam cylinder oil. Put some bearing oil in the valve gear cups, a little more on the crosshead guides and axle journals. Keep an eye out for any loose bolts, pipe fittings, and hoses. When that safety valve releases steam, we're ready to move out of the engine facility and onto the line. The regular train crew of engineer, fireman, conductor, and brakeman take over and connect to the train. When locomotives are out of steam and cold, they need help moving around the roundhouse. A short locomotive called a yard goat must be able to fit on the turntable bridge along with the cold locomotive when moving in or out of the roundhouse. In 1930, the Anchorage shops converted me to standard gauge so I could become yard goat number 6. Old Dave is back to work again. Now that I could get around the yard, I got to work with the big locomotives. There were 3 mics, so we just called them by numbers, 701, 702, and 703. They handled the biggest of trains, both freight and passenger. While sitting in the roundhouse, I heard a lot of gossip. Some tall stories, real whoppers, and amazing true stories. For example, snow slides between Anchorage and Seward got so deep that the rotary snowplow could only work through them after hundreds of men had hand-shoveled the snow down to about 13 foot deep. The rotary would make a cut just wide enough for the train, and then another avalanche would bury the tracks again. When a steamship came into Seward, the train would take passengers to the first blockage. Passengers would then carry their own baggage over the avalanche zone to another train on the other side, then continue their train trip to Anchorage. I saw my first diesel-electric locomotives when number 1000 and 1001 arrived in Anchorage for training in 1944. Brand new from the American Locomotive Company, the RS-1 locals were purchased for use through the 2 long tunnels on the new Whittier branch line. Crews on the steamers had complained about all the smoke in the tunnels, and soon more Alco locomotives arrived to help. About that time, 1,000 men from the United States Army 714th Military Wearaway Operating Battalion came to operate the railroad during World War II. The 550-class S-160 consolidations arrived in 1943 and 44. These were small coal-fired locomotives with a 280 wheel arrangement. They were known as Connies for short. Built for narrow European standards, the engineer and fireman could not see around a boxcar or a coach right behind the engine. There were over 2,100, that's right, 2,120 in total, Connies shipped off to Europe and Asia during the war, and many stayed on to serve their adopted countries in peace. Only 12 came to Alaska, but they served well even after the diesels took over regular service. The Tanana and Nanana Rivers often flooded at the railroad town of Nanana. Diesel-electric locomotives with electric traction motors could not get their feet wet for fear of shorting out in the water. Steamers 557 and 556 got the assignment to meet the north and southbound trains on either side of the floodwaters and replace the diesel locomotives for a trip through the Nanana floods. Those proud steamers were the last in regular service while waiting in water right up to the bottom of the firebox. About that time, I was retired again, replaced by number 51, a small four-wheel General Electric diesel switcher. The railroad was taking on a new image with blue and gold paint on all the diesel locomotives and passenger cars. New streamliner passenger service was planned between Anchorage and Fairbanks. A competition was held in Alaskan schools to name the new train. The winning entry was Aurora, A-U-R-O-R-A, get it? I was pulled over to the engine house, got new pilot beams, a boiler check, a coat of paint, a new bell, and a lot of attention. With a fire in my belly and a full head of steam, the crew ran me back and forth and declared me fit for service. Out of retirement again, but for what service? Then they changed my number from number 6 to number 1, a real honor. Come to find out, I had seniority on the railroad, being the oldest operational standard gauge locomotive. The big day came. October 18th, 1947, was Alaska Day. They coupled me up to some canteen cars and whistled off toward the Anchorage Depot, where the new streamliner Aurora passenger train stood on track 2. The crew rang my bell, tooted my whistle with one long blast after rolling me right up on track 1. When I was alongside the Aurora, all the flashbulbs went off. After the speeches were done, dignitaries and special guests boarded the Aurora for the inaugural run to McKinley Park. Blat, blat on the diesel horn, and they were gone at 10 a.m. Then came the best part of my day. All the kids left on the platform got to ride back and forth on my little train for the rest of the afternoon. I thought for sure my days were done when on a cold February day in 1948, I was loaded on a truck. The Kiwanis Club had laid track down the middle of Fifth Avenue from C Street to L Street. The Moose Gooser Railroad was operated from 7 a.m. to 11 p.m. each day of the 1948 for rendezvous. All 2,400 Anchorage school children got free rides, and the fare was 10 cents for kids and 25 cents for adults. What a hoot, or should I say, toot, toot. My last revenue runs were in passenger service. Once again, it was off to the storage track with a cold boiler. Talk about depression. After all that action. In 1952, the railroad was just completing a 5-year renovation of the entire Alaska Railroad system. The contractors working on the railroad thought they needed to do something really special for the dedication ceremony. So they built a nice stone pedestal across the street from the Anchorage Depot and insisted that Davenport number 1 take the position of honor. Under a tarp atop the pedestal, with a locomotive engineer at the controls, a smoke bomb was lit in my firebox. A crane lifted the tarp and I was revealed, bell ringing, white smoke pouring from my stack. Flash bulbs again. Just when I thought life was past and I was feeling lonely, tourists began to drop by and take my picture. After all, I was number one. I had a good vantage point from which to see all the train traffic. Number 557 was rewarded for her flood duties by being assigned the fair passenger special going to the First Alaska State Fair in Palmer. The new EMD Streamline 1500 Series F7 units arrived and took over the passenger trains. By 1956, all my steamer buddies from the roundhouse days were gone. Mountains, 482 steamers I knew as the McKinley Brothers, number 801 and 802, were the largest locomotives to ever operate on the Alaska Railroad. Both gone to scrap. The Graceful Pacifics, 462 locomotives, number 901 and 902, both fast ladies who drew passenger trains, were now gone. All the 550-class GI Connies were destined for scrap when 556 was hauled up to the Delaney Park Strip. She still entertains people in the park. All of her sisters but for one went to scrap. All unused coaling stations and water towers were removed to mark the end of the steam era. A generous hobo, Monty Holm, who made it big in the recycling business, purchased number 557 for scrap. Instead of cutting her up, he installed her in his personal museum in Moses Lake, Washington, where you could visit with the fair queen who waded the floodwaters. On his passing, some of Monty's friends purchased number 557 and sent her back to Alaska, where she will steam again. At first glance, those diesels on parade all looked alike and sounded alike. GP7s, GP30s, GP38s, GP40s, and GP49s, all general-purpose diesel-electric locomotives. They arrived in black and yellow paint schemes and later in blue and gold. Built by Electromotive Division, they varied in horsepower, as indicated by their assigned numbers. They had their troubles with snow, too, and they never have learned how to wade in water. They're capable of pulling 80-car coal trains, 90-car oil trains, and the ever-present gravel trains that pass my inspection every day. Starting a new century of service, the Alaska Railroad now calls on the SD-70 Mack locomotives. Built by EMD and equipped with GPS and all the latest PTC gizmos, they easily take on the most severe tasks in both passenger and freight service. 4,000-class locomotives with 12 wheels on the rail weigh 210 tons compared to my 6 tons. They weigh less than steamers 801 and 802, but pull 4 times as much tonnage. I'm taking more interest in diesels every day. They've been named for communities along the rail belt, such as Spirit of Anchorage. The latest Big Macs are the 4300 class with special head-end power, that is, to supply heat and air conditioning for passenger trains. They can also divert all that extra power to traction motors for freight service. Where were they when I needed them in Panama for the big dig? Express trains, boat trains, gravel trains, ski trains, coal trains, oil trains, and work trains all pass by on a more and more scheduled basis. I expect any day to see commuters coming and going from the depot. I suspect those locomotives are sounding their horns just to keep me awake. Having passed my 100th birthday, I, David Davenport, number 763, feel privileged to be one of the survivors representing the heritage of the Alaska Railroad. My seniority is not taken for granted. I hope to carry number one for many years. After all, we also serve who only stand and wait and watch and listen and tell stories. Toot!